Likutei Siches, Chelek Chof Aleph, Volume 21, Purim. The Midrash relates that after Haman's decree against the Jews was signed and sealed, the fate of the nation in his hands, Haman and his companions rejoiced and walked in the streets when they noticed Mordechai. Mordechai had seen three children coming from school, and he raced to reach them. Haman observed this, and he and his friends followed Mordechai to hear what the discussion between Mordechai and the children would be. When Mordechai reached the children, he asked one of them to share what verse he had studied, and the child answered, "Al tira mipachat pisaim u'meshayas rishayim kisavi." Do not fear sudden danger, nor the destruction of a wicked plot. The second child spoke and said, "I studied, and this was the verse we got up to. Utsu eitza v'sufar, dabru dover v'layakum, ki imanukel. They will contrive a scheme, but it will be foiled. Contrive a plot, but it will not materialize, for God is with us." And the third child spoke and said, "Viad zikna anihu, viad seva ani esbol, ani asisi v'ani esa v'ani esbol v'amaleit. To old age, I, Hashem, is with me. Into one's very senior years, God will sustain us. I have made you, says God. I will carry you. I will sustain and deliver you." When Mordechai heard their responses and the verses they had learned, he was very joyous. Haman asked him why he was so happy hearing the words of the children. And Mordechai answered that he was rejoicing with the good news they had delivered, that he must not fear from the evil plot that Haman advised against us. Haman was immediately infuriated and said, "If so, these children will be my first victims." The obvious reason for Mordechai's joy when he heard these verses from the children is because he heard the prophecy in their words, that he was not to fear the decree of Haman. There are indeed multiple sources in the Mishnah and the Gemara that teach the idea of hearing a verse that a child shares as a prophecy from on high. But in our discussion, this isn't a sufficient answer for all the detail that's included in the story, besides for the core lesson that Mordechai met the children coming from their studies and that there were three children who shared three verses, even though other details of the story, like Mordechai encountering the children and not that he sought them out, as well as the detail that it was more than one child who shared verses whose contents were words of good news, highlight the lesson to be learned and the prophecy contained within the words of the verses. But the details that they were coming from school and that Mordechai specifically approached them are not. Every discussion in Torah is absolutely specific. And thus, the details in this story and the specific words used to relate it to are exact and relevant to the discussion. In that case, let's understand the order in which the children share the three verses, Altira, Utsu Eitza, and Va'ad Zikna, is not in the order that these verses are quoted in the Pentateuch. The verses, Utsu Eitza and Va'ad Zikna, are in the book of Isaiah, which comes before the book of Mishlei, where the verse Altira is quoted. Usually, children are taught in order of the scriptures. The order is also not reversed from the later verse or the last verse as inscribed in the scriptures to the earliest. Number two, the Midrash tells us that the first child immediately began to recite the verse he had learned. But regarding the second child, the Midrash tells us that he said, "I studied scripture today, and this is the verse I just studied at school that I finished with," and then proceeded to share Utsu Eitza V'Sufar, etc. In other words, he studied other verses that day, but this was the final one. So did the first child learn only the one verse that he shared that day? And number three, because Mordechai accepted these verses as a prophecy, why does he answer Haman's question saying, "I'm happy with the good news I was given"? Why not say with the good prophecies? As well, let's understand. The Midrash teaches that this took place after the decree against the Jews was signed, and Mordechai was joyful with the good news that the children shared and the prophecies of the verses, that the meaning of the verses was that there is nothing to fear in regards to Haman's evil plot. In which case, why did he then don sackcloth and ashes and go through the city, crying loudly and bitterly over the decree after this? And what about all the things he did that he, and had Esther do, as we learn in the Megillah, to foil the decree? This all leads us to thinking that Mordechai did not accept the verses out of the mouths of the children as actual prophecy. And if he didn't, then what was he so elated about? The point here, though, is that the decree was Lahashmid Lahareg Ulaabedis Kol HaYehudim Minar V'Yad Zokein Taf V'Nashim, to wipe out, kill, and utterly destroy all the Jews, from young to old, children and women. The reason for the decree was, as we read in the Megillah, because an order went out to all the subjects of the king that they were required to bow to Haman, and Mordechai did not bend nor bow, and he was angered and decided to harm Mordechai and to destroy the entire nation. In other words, when Haman investigated as to why Mordechai wasn't bowing to him, as the Medrash teaches, and discovered that it wasn't a personal thing. It wasn't about his personal status as a leader among the Jews or the head of the Sanhedrin, but because he was one of the Jewish people. And as a Jew, he believes in only one God and denies all idolatry and anything that perceives itself as a cause for its own existence. This infuriated Haman. And since Mordechai would not bend a knee nor bow because he was a Jew, it infuriated Haman and he sought to harm Mordechai. But because not bowing to Haman was an essential point of Judaism, which made this true for every single Jew, from young to old, children and women alike, Haman realized that not only Mordechai, but the entire nation that Mordechai belonged to clearly does not recognize him. They don't really mean it when they bend or bow, and he sought a way to destroy all the Jews. But how was Haman able to do this? How was he able to bring a decree of this magnitude against the Jews? Our sages explain that the spiritual answer to this is that because they did indicate that they were bowing to Haman when he passed them, except for Mordechai, even though they had no intention of worship when doing so, and commentary suggests that it was only out of fear of reprisal, doing so goes contrary to the very pivotal point of one's Jewishness and affects the essential bond of a Jew and God, and thus it resulted in the decree of destruction, because a Jew's entire existence depends on his connection to God. This was actually what worried Mordechai and what caused him to don sackcloth and ashes and to walk wailing bitterly through the streets. Mordechai knew everything that had occurred, the Megillah tells us. He knew the cause of the decree, and he worried whether this was an act of idol worship, God forbid. Even though they bowed only externally, not with any internal intention, Mordechai worried that it showed that their essential bond with God was not in a state of revelation. For had it been in a revealed state, a Jew would, as the Alter Rebbe teaches, withstand a test of self-sacrifice to the extent of even refusing to do a mere empty act that's contrary to his belief in the one God, to bow before an idol, even without acknowledging it in his heart at all. A Jew's desire, says the Alter Rebbe, to be attached to God is such that he instinctively recoils in fear and in dread from touching, God forbid, even the fringe of the impurity of idolatry, which would deny the faith in God's unity. Thus, Mordechai knew that the way to nullify the decree of Haman was through awakening the dormant pivotal point of their Judaism into a state of revelation, and that this characteristic of Mordechai's people to never kneel or bow should in fact permeate every soul garment of a Jew, a Jew's thought, their speech, and their action to the point of actual self-sacrifice. So when he heard from the children who were coming from school the verses that highlight faith and the trust in God, he knew that Jews would ultimately withstand the test and will be prepared to sacrifice life for their Jewishness or for God's name. This made him feel elated because there was nothing to fear about the decree. He knew that the decree itself would not cause the Jews to deny their Jewishness out of fear. And when he heard the good news, but following this event, he rent his garments and donned garments of mourning and went out publicly wailing, It was so that the Jews in all the states under Ahasuerus's dominion went into a state of mourning and fasting. It was to awaken the essential Jew in everyone to the point of readiness for self-sacrifice. So why three verses? What was different about each of these three verses? The verse, Al tira mipachat pisim, fear not from sudden danger, umishayas rishayim kisavai, and from the destructive plots of evildoers, speaks about an obvious danger, and the verse tells us that God says, don't be afraid. Without reason or understanding, just don't fear. In the verse, Utsu Eitzo V'Sufar, Dabru Davar V'lo Yakum Ki Imanu Kel, they will contrive a plot and it will fail, and scheme, but it will not materialize. Because God is with us, doesn't speak to an actual and present danger, but about plots and schemes to bring evil upon us. The verse promises that not only will these fail, but also why they will fail, because God is with us. And in the third verse, V'yad zikna anihu, V'yad seva ani espol, I'll be with you, says God, into your hoary years. I've made you, sustain you, and will continue to carry you. What is being addressed is neither a time of difficulty or even the possibility of it, but one's old age, a natural time of change that God created as organic change in a person's life. And God promises to sustain and support us beyond having made us. Spiritually, these three verses address three levels of faith and trust in God, each drawing out the self-sacrifice of a Jew. Sudden danger and the destruction of a wicked plot cause a natural fear in a person. Yet, a Jew's faith means that there is no such fear and he needs no reason and no logical justification not to be fearful. His organic emotional default is, as our sages teach, whatever God does is for good. Stronger yet is one's faith that nothing will come of the evil plans and schemes. And there's a logical explanation for that sure and strong faith, which is ki imanu kel, God is with us. Beyond that yet, there's the complete acceptance that God is with us well into our old age, and the entire time it is he who sustains us and supports us, so that even when there is the natural decline of age and the natural order of aging that God himself put into the laws of nature of man, a Jew is not thrown by these changes, nor is he or she controlled by these changes. And thus the verse ends not with the words, because God is with us, but beyond that even with the assurance of the words, Ani Asisi, I made you, I will carry you, I will sustain and deliver you. These three are also three ascending categories in the education of children who are in school. The first child who shared, a little child whose education is just beginning, spoke a verse which alludes to God's salvation, but he has not learned beyond this. Before he can, however, understand anything logically, he needs to have a simple, unequivocal belief that he has nothing to fear, neither from sudden danger nor from evil plans of destruction. As a child becomes older and has studied more, he can say, I studied today and concluded my day with a verse. The child has a level of independent capacity to read or learn in greater depth, accessing a higher level of faith in God and trust with assurity, and the understanding of no plot can harm us. Every plot will be foiled because God is with us. The third level or category of child described has matured in his understanding and in his das, his ability to integrate what he has studied. And within this child, we nurture the absolute awareness that a Jew is not influenced or impressed by even the natural limitations that exist that God himself placed into human development, with a reasoning as taught in the verse. When Mordechai heard the verses that the children shared coming from school, he recognized that their education wasn't just something they learned sitting in school behind desks, but the faith and connection to God planted in their school studies that they could also grasp logically was also integrated, so much so that when they left that school environment, they took this with them to their homes. And he rejoiced so deeply for this, for he saw that from these verses that the children shared, that the entire Jewish nation's essential bond to their Judaism was intact. So that even for those for whom this connection was not yet in a revealed state, these children would be able to arouse this connection into a state of revelation by bringing home what they studied in school. Hence, Mordechai's response to Haman's question, that he's rejoicing for the good news that was delivered, that there's nothing to fear from the evil decree that you plotted against us. The very words of these children were the delivery of the good news, that the Jewish nation is intact and whole, and will continue to be whole, and that their essential point of connection to God, to the point of self-sacrifice that can nullify the decree of Haman, is whole, and there is nothing to fear. Which is obviously why Haman immediately became infuriated and said, I will harm the children first, because it is in the children that he saw there was continuity of our people, and the reason for why Mordechai would not bend or bow before him or before any foreign deity in any form of idol worship. Accordingly, there's a whole new additional explanation in the well-known saying of our sages that at the time of these events, our nation fulfilled what they had already accepted at Sinai. At Sinai, Chassidus explains, we only began our journey of connection to God, for at Sinai our ability to say, we will do and we will hear, with such self-sacrifice, came from the inspiration we received from God, from the influence of the many miracles we had experienced, and the heightened reality of the moment, which was, say our sages, like God holding a mountain over our heads. What choice did we have but to accept? But in the events of Purim, we experienced a full acceptance that flowed from the self-sacrifice that we elicited from within ourselves, thus completing the journey of Sinai in our acceptance of the Torah then. Just like we began this journey of connection at Matan Torah, and it was in the merit of the children who God accepted as our guarantors, entrusting us and giving us the Torah, so it was in the days of Ahasuerus when we achieved the full acceptance of the Torah. It was through the children, our guarantors, specifically the 22,000 children that Mordechai gathered and studied with, planting within them and nurturing the revealed experience of self-sacrifice. Purim completed Matan Torah. This experience of revealed self-sacrifice existed in potential at Sinai. It existed in the soul of every Jew, and it came from a transcendent reality. And Purim brought it into a state of actualization. The nation owned it, and it was integrated in a physical way. And similarly, the children who were declared by their parents as guarantors at Sinai implemented and manifested this during the story of Purim, influencing their parents to the same. Therefore, it was then specifically that the complete acceptance of Torah was manifest. This is a lesson for all generations, particularly for our generation, which is the generation of Mashiach, as we are yet under the dominion of Ahasuerus. When we want to assess the situation and what is coming our way as a Jewish people, we need to look at the children and what they're bringing home from school. To be clear, this means that the education of our children must be such that from their earliest years, before they're even capable of understanding the logic of something, must be educated, and it must be carved into their psyche to fear nothing but God alone, as the father of the Baal Shem Tov instructed his child when he was but 5 years old, fear nothing and no one in this world other than God alone. And then, as a child grows and can understand, they'll be taught the second idea, understanding that plots will be plotted and schemes will be schemed, but none will come to fruition because God is with us. And then the third idea, as discussed, that nothing holds sway over a Jew, not even nature itself. In order for a child to really grasp this and internalize it, these ideas must be studied, not only in the written word, but the Hasidic explanation too should be taught. And when Jewish children carry these messages and these ideas with them and live with them, when they leave school and go home to their houses, it is today as it was then, an assurance that this will ensure the continuity of our Torah, and there will be nothing in the world to fear, because from the mouths of young children, we will gather strength to destroy our enemies, thereby fulfilling the verse, The hearts of the fathers will be returned through the children, through their children, when God will send Eliyahu the prophet, who will, as Rashi explains in Malachi, instruct our children with love to go and speak to their fathers to strengthen themselves in God's ways, leading to the great and awesome day, merging redemption to redemption, redemption of Purim, to the final redemption of our people, the day of the true and complete redemption through our righteous Mashiach, speedily, mamash.